Hey, Jonathan Goodman here. I have super exciting news. My book, The Obvious Choice, that I've been talking about forever, is almost here. This is published by HarperCollins. The president of Shopify endorsed it. The editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine endorsed it. This thing is going to blow the roofs off, and I'm asking that you please pre-order your copy today on your local Amazon, wherever you buy books. It's available. It's called The Obvious Choice. Hope you pre-order it. Hope you love it. Be there and be present, or don't be there at all. Huck around the corner and take 5 minutes before coming home to yourself. Answer the emails, scroll social media, or just sit and stare. But finish what you need to do before you get home. When you walk in the door, have your head up, smiling, ready to hug your wife, play with your kids, or help with dinner. When it comes to home life, it's better to be fully there for less time than only be half aware, even if you're there for longer. Burp and speak in the same... In the same breath, did you just burp and speak?
That burp was moist.
Jaden's cute now. He'll burp or he'll fart and he'll be like, I burp. He's so funny, man.
It's important.
God, that kid cracks me up. He's so funny these days. We never got this with Calvin because I guess there wasn't like a Calvin to Jaden. It wasn't like an older brother to Jaden, right? Or to Calvin. And so we never got it with him. Just the mimicry, everything Calvin does, Jaden copies. And it is just and Calvin just hams it up. Like, he plays it up, right? It's the funniest thing, man. Calvin will just be singing. He'll be like, Skibbity Ohio in the toilet. And then Jaden's like, Skibbity Ohio toilet.
I feel like boys do that more than sisters. I really do feel like that.
Do what? Mimic?
Yes. More than sisters. Yeah. Sisters just have a tendency to hate each other.
Yeah, we do it for emotional damage when we mimic.
Right.
It's not right. To hurt.
It's not, joint it's not out of admiration.
No, when girls do it, it's for emotional damage. It's just emotional warfare.
We're brutal to each other.
Let's
so mean.
Let's start the episode today, shall we, fellas? Friends.
Whatever.
The chapter that I'm working on right now for this next book, we actually have a potential title too, which I'd love to get your feedback on. But the chapter that I'm working on right now is unique in that it's actually not a chapter. It doesn't have any narrative structure like every other chapter that I try to write is. It doesn't really have a theme. Instead, it's literally just a chapter of rules. And so there will be about 50 of them. Originally, there was 46, but I've added a few as I've like gone back and edited. So I think it's at about 50, 51 right now. And it's literally just rules. Like, these are rules to live by. These are rules to go about my day. And the context of it is what I start the section with right now is that the paradoxical reward for accepting reality's constraints is that they no longer feel so constraining. And rules make you feel safe. When you know the rules, you are less stressed. But the corollary to all of this, of course, is that they need to be your rules, not rules imposed upon you. And the reason is quite simple. Your brain has two operating systems. System one is fast, automatic, and intuitive. System two is slow, deliberate, and conscious. Daniel Kahneman's work, this is Thinking Fast and Slow. If you've ever read that book, I didn't come up with this. Most everything that you do day to day is habitual and fast acting. Red light means stop. Green light means go. You don't think about it, which is fine. It saves energy. If we had to consciously think about all of the things we did over the course of a day, we would go absolutely buckshit crazy. There's just too much stimulus, too many decisions. And so the vast majority of things, even like putting one foot in front of the other when you're walking, is unconscious, which is good. But sometimes you should slow down, expend more energy, and become more conscious. Sometimes you almost need to hack your brain and force it to call up system two. And that's what these rules do. These rules force system two. They wake you up out of your autopilot and they bypass that shortcutting. I have been collecting these types of rules for many, many years. Some of them might sound familiar because I've spoken about them in different contexts over the course of this podcast. But I've never actually shared like this collection of the rules before. And if I'm honest, I've never actually written them all out one by one in a giant list with like a little bit of reasoning behind them. it's a phenomenally beneficial exercise. And the reason for that is that I don't follow every single one of these rules all of the time. I'd like to, but I'm a human man. I'm not a robot. What these rules do is they act as reminders of the person that I want to be, not of the person that I always am. And so as I'm going through these, I'm not going to get through them all. And what I'd like to do actually with you, Anna-Moon-Ran, is basically read through the rule, maybe give like a quick 30-second like background of it, a quick story of it, and then open it up. And if you guys have anything to add or any context or it brings anything in your mind of something that goes on in your world, I'd love to hear that. And then we can move on to the next. But as I'm doing this, you won't agree with all of the rules. And so take the Bruce Lee approach, right? Adopt what's useful, discard what's not, and then add in your own. Okay. Here's the first rule. Actually, let me start with this before I get into the rules. I had a long conversation with my editor yesterday. You know, I'm like 45,000 words into the book. Like, I'm getting there. I'm almost done. And so we had just a conversation 2 days ago, just to touch base, just to sync. He's gone through the first four chapters. So he's gone through the first 20, 25,000 words already. So he's got a good idea of what it is, what he thinks it is, where he sees the opportunity as well from the proposal. And it always morphs since then, but it's kept more or less the same. And, you know, the theme is kind of kept the same. And just talked about the packaging of the book. For example, that interlude that I wrote about getting pregnant, Allison's illness, all of that type of stuff. We're actually thinking right now that interlude might actually be broken up into three parts and almost act as the scaffolding of the book.
Mm.
So the beginning will be the beginning part of that. And it'll be like 500 words each, like really, really fast. But that could actually provide a really neat scaffolding of the book, which I think could be quite interesting. There are some examples of that. My friend Alex Hutchinson's book did that in his book Endure, for example. It's a really neat way to scaffold a book, is you basically tell one story that reinforces the general themes and the major lessons from it, from your own life. And you tell that story throughout the book and you keep revisiting it. I think it's a really cool thing to do. But we also talked about like what the book is about. For example, the obvious choice, you know, it was 15 different lessons, that book. But ostensibly what that book is about is understanding that there are different games that you get to choose to play these days in this world when it comes to business. Figuring out which game you decide to play, understanding the rules to that game, reverse engineering how to make those rules best work for you, and playing the hell out of it, as opposed to becoming very reactive to other good information for other games that is actually bad advice for you. And so that's what the Obvious Choice book is about. That's the theme of the whole thing. There are 15 lessons that can be read independent of one another, but that's what the book is. That's the main thing, right? And so this book, the main thing is get out of your autopilot. Like, these are ways to wake up and get out of your autopilot and figuring out kind of little hacks throughout the day to do that. Because it's very easy to fall into patterns. It's very easy to add and continue to add and never take the time to stop and perhaps subtract or reassess whether what you've added is actually beneficial to you, or you're just doing it because you've already doing it, or you own it because you've always owned it. And so the original title for this book was Too Early for Coffee. And the idea is how to get excited for your day-to-day. I don't mind that title. I like it because it really links together with The Obvious Choice. The end story of the last chapter of The Obvious Choice, it ends with a story about me being so excited for my work that I was too early for coffee. So it links the two together nicely. But it's not the type of title that makes you immediately say, oh, I get it. You know, it's the way that Matt, the VP, kind of said to me, and it makes a lot of sense. He's like, Too Early for Coffee is the type of title that after the book becomes successful, people will say, holy shit, that was brilliant. But it's not the book that's going to help, or it's not the title that's going to help a book become successful in the first place. And so that could be fine, right? If there could be anything else. And so we've been playing around with a bunch of other title conventions and stuff like that. Calvin and I have a rule. And we started this rule last year in Mexico. And the rule is quite simple. The rule is, when you see a sunset, shut up and watch. And so the title that we're considering right now, and it was kind of one of those things where, like, I was going through the rules, I was talking to Tim, I was talking to my editor about it. I was like, actually, that could be a good title, because the whole idea of the book is getting out of your autopilot and recognizing these little moments throughout the day that you should stop and pay attention to and how special and how magical. But it also needs to be immediately obvious that there's benefit there. And also, like, kind of said in maybe a little bit less nice words, like, get your head out of your fucking ass. Like basically this book is a book about how to get your head out of your own ass. And so the title that we're thinking about right now is Shut Up and Watch the Sunset. Thoughts? Reactions?
I like it. It was already in my head to write it that way, write the statement that way, shut up and watch the sunset. I thought you were going to say the whole phrase. When you find a sunset, a setup, shut up and watch it. I was like, well, that's going to be a bit lengthy.
That is woody.
I like it probably. It's probably circumstantial because of my age and set of life situations that I've been through. There are many times where that resonates for me when I wish I would have done that exactly. Because when you're, you know, in 20, 30, you don't know who you're not going to be able to see the next day, right? And having that be a really relevant part of my life now.
Yeah.
Wish I hadn't sort of rushed off to do work in some instances of my life. Wish I would have taken an extra day around the house. Like, right. You know, so it's very meaningful for me personally. So I love the idea of the title and the concept. I don't have enough smarts in this area to know how generally well received that title would be. But it means something to me. Yeah.
Titles are hard because, you know, the conventional advice right now with a title is you actually put it through a whole series of testing. And so there are services where anonymous people, right, will give you, you basically pay for the service and people will give you feedback on titles and tell you which they like, tell you which they didn't like. Or you can do the whole send out Facebook ads, basically like with fake copies of the book with different titles and then you measure the responses of it. I don't think those tell the whole story because, you know, the question of do you like this title versus does this title perhaps illuminate some sort of emotion in you or get you to want to buy the book or talk about the book. You know, is this a story that you're going to be able to pass on to somebody else? In addition, like a little bit of a kick in the gut. Like it's got to be painful enough for you to stop what you're doing and pick up that book. And so that's why, I mean, I don't know, maybe a better title is Get Your Head Out of Your Own Ass. But...
Perhaps so. The subtle art of not giving a fuck. Like, sometimes it just needs to be that blatant.
Yeah. Well, what's the other one? And bitch, watch your face?
People. Right. Bitch, watch your face.
Yeah, it feels a little bit too much like a rework of Stop and Smell the Roses. Like, it's almost a little too obvious for me. Because that's exactly where my head... I like the shut up part. Like, shut up and something. But... not watch the sunset necessarily, because then immediately it feels almost a little cliche of Stop and Smell the Roses,
right?
For me,
so shut up and what?
I don't know.
It'll come to you.
Yeah.
Okay.
You keep writing, John. You know, Thriller was almost called Starlight.
I didn't. Thank you for that piece of information.
Original title of that song is Starlight. Starlight, yeah. It would have been total toilet.
Snooze fest.
snooze fest. It's got lyrics in it. You can listen to the Starlight version of Thriller on the interwebs.
That sounds like the kind of song that somebody named Lamont would sing.
That's exactly that's what I've been saying. Big dummy. It's like, why'd you name me Lamont? Your brother used to like that show. Oh, thanks, Mom. she didn't even try to, but it's because your grandmother was from a tribe originally somewhere outside of Angola, Africa. And we took the tribal. No, your brother likes Sanford and Son. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks. Thanks, Mom.
Thanks, Mom.
Thanks, Mom. Okay.
I'm sorry. It's too much about me.
I've split these rules into four categories. We're just going to go over the first one today. And the category is Bad Habits Start in the Home. It's maybe the title of the episode. So Bad Habits Start in the Home. The other three categories are People You Love, Email and Phones, and then Becoming Happier Day to Day.
I'll take Potpourri for 600, Alex. I don't know.
Throw all the shit that doesn't fit in the other categories in that last one for 300, Alex.
Take swords for 500, Alex. That's S words.
That's S words. What is
your mother's an S word? I love that skit on Saturday Night Live. I'm sorry, John. I keep delaying you. Please go ahead.
The Alex Trebek Celebrity Jeopardies were so funny.
It's so good. It's so good. It's so good because Will Ferrell basically can't not be funny.
Yeah,
he's the type of person, he just gives you regular information. You're like, that's hilarious. And he's like, no, I'm being serious right now.
Supposedly, there's a there's three different versions of Miss Doubtfire because Robin Williams ad-libbed so much. Supposedly, there's a like family, a PG-13, and like a rated R version of the movie.
Oh my gosh.
And I just want to see that rated R version of the movie.
I want all of them, John.
I just want to see that rated R version. Okay. Bad habits start in the home. So yeah, I mean, your home is a place to relax. But it's also the place where you build your day's momentum. It's also the place where you set the example for your children. And it's also the place where you provide evidence to yourself for the person you want to become. Your home is really important. And so these are some rules to be less passive around the house. The first one is no junk food in the house. So this rule came from a bodybuilder that I watched like a vlog way, way back in the day before YouTube. And he said that if junk food was in the house, he'd eat it. If it's there, he'll eat it. He can't stop himself. He's not strong-willed enough. And I remember seeing that at the time. I think it was Kai Greene, although I'd have to go back and find it. But I remember seeing that at the time and thinking, if one of the most physically disciplined men in the world can't control himself from reaching for candy if it's in his cupboard, yo, you don't have a chance. And so candy is wonderful. So is chocolate and chips and ice cream. Don't restrict yourself. If you want it, go out and get it. But make it so you got to walk to the gas station on the corner and buy yourself a chocolate bar. Enjoy it. Just don't mindlessly consume it.
Yeah.
I got nothing. It's pretty straightforward. I think because we all work in the coaching arena, it's kind of a sort of a known. You know, I don't have anything to add to that.
No, like just it's fine to eat it. It's fine to have it. Most of the time you don't actually want it though, you're just tired or bored.
Yeah, tired or bored. Absolutely. It's the idea of creating friction between. So for me, it's donuts because I am born and raised in the same city as Krispy Kreme donuts. They were created in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, where I'm from. Had Krispy Kreme donuts in our elementary school. It's Starlight, John. Starlight. I'm sending you a link.
Okay.
But we had Krispy Kreme donuts in all of our in our school cafeterias. And they were wholesale price, so I ate donuts every lunch, for sure in high school. But in any case, and they bring me comfort. You know, had a bad day, hey, let's go get some donuts. I had a good day, you deserve some donuts. So I can't have them in my house, so I create friction. I have permission to eat them or anything that I want. I don't have permission to keep them close, and I don't have permission to buy more than two. So I have to leave my house if I want some. I can do that anytime. But the friction of putting on clothes and getting in a car and driving across town and standing in line and getting donuts and driving back, and then I eat the two, I'm damn sure not going back outside again. Not in my 50s era where I just generally don't like humans. I'm not going back outside for the damn donuts. So there's no restriction.
Let's be honest. Yeah. Most of the time when you want donuts, you're not wearing pants. And
this is exactly right.
Having to put on pants to eat donuts is a lot to overcome. Hey, Jonathan Goodman, and I wanted to invite you to pre-order my next book called The Obvious Choice. This is my first traditionally published book. It's been published by HarperCollins. Sam Poe, if you listen to My First Million podcast, called it a much-needed recalibration for a business generation that's focused on the wrong thing at the wrong time. Jason Pfeiffer, the editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine, said that if you want to win in business without feeling like you need to win the internet, you gotta get this book. So why pre-order it instead of getting it when it's ready? Well, there's two reasons, really. The first is that it's really, really beneficial for me selfishly. It helps me a lot. My publishers love it. But the second beneficial for you is you actually lock in the best ever price. No joke, I pre-ordered a book that was $40 not too long ago. And because the price went down over the pre-order period for like a day to $29.99, when the book arrived to me on the day of the launch, I actually got refunded by Amazon $10. Because when you pre-order a book on Amazon, you lock in the lowest price ever. So if Amazon ever lowers the price, which they often do, you're gonna get that price and get refunded, whatever the difference is from when you pre-ordered it. So there's benefit to you, there's benefit to me. Please pre-order the book, The Obvious Choice, anywhere you buy books, but Amazon gives you this other benefit. Hope that you love it. Hope you're good.
You're never fully in the throes of productive work wanting donuts. You know, you're half hobo. You're in a half state of hoboness when donut cravings hit. So to have to structure yourself into a functional human being and venture out into society, it's the last thing on your mind. Last thing in your mind. So and I don't do discipline, right? Mm. I do systems, right? Systems discipline me, but I don't really, aside from Mike O'Hearn, shout out to Mike. I don't believe any human can truly discipline themselves. He's the exception. I believe the first time I saw him speak, he left the stage to heat up his food. I can't remember. But, that's a very disciplined human. But everybody else, all the regular people, nah.
Well, that was wonderful because that gave me a lot of language, Ruan, that I'm going to go and spruce up.
Do that language. So that's all I want to do, John. I also have cake on my desk right now. Should I eat it to make your point?
No.
Say no more.
Next rule. Next rule. Make your bed. Start your day with a positive action that sets off a chain reaction, a sign that you're intent on taking care of your future self. No need to tuck in the corners, just neaten it up a bit. I don't know. Anything to add? I feel like that one's been beaten to death. But so I have been surprised at how much better I feel when I just like pull the covers back, you know?
I remember seeing recently a video about this, and it's recommended to wait at least 30 minutes because something about bed mites or dust mites or something, you're supposed to wait at least 30 minutes before making your bed. So that's what comes up for me now, because I'm scared about the mites.
That's living rent-free in your head until you die, Amber.
So now I got
you can probably see the dust mites. Oh my gosh. I can't believe you even get in a bed after somebody. Nobody should ever give you information like that.
Like,
that
was just the eyelash mites. You know, they just live there. Yeah.
Okay, you're gonna need to stop. Man.
Wow.
I need to stop.
I'm gonna move on to the next.
Your bed. Please. Don't worry about waiting 30 minutes. It's just there to scare you. There's gonna be dust mites in your bed regardless. They're gonna be gross if you look at them under a microscope. So just do what I do and just pretend that it doesn't exist. Okay, next. Prep your morning coffee at night. Grind the beans, fill the kettle, and set out your favorite mug before bed. What you lose in freshness, you gain in more rapid caffeine injection into your veins. Nothing.
I like that. I don't. Here's the next coffee.
One. This one's going to be fun for Amber. Are you ready for this one? I thought of you when I wrote this. If it's yellow, let it mellow. If it's brown, flush it down. Toilets use a lot of water. Urine's pretty benign stuff. If you're at home and you don't have company, don't flush every time somebody goes pee. Conserve water. Flush the brown stuff, then do a single flush of all toilets before bed.
Amber. I am not comfortable that my I came up in your mind when thinking about pee. This is not a good
pee is so benign. I mean, I'm not saying you should like pee on each other, but like pee is pretty benign stuff. Like it's pretty harmless. You know, if it's stinky okay. or whatever, flush it. But like, I'm gonna flush every time I go pee. That's ridiculous. You know how much water that weighs?
No, get okay, a get Kelly. A low water waste toilet and flush every time.
Still uses too much water. Take what's useful, discard what's not.
I'm just giving you my reaction. I think it's
some of us like to support the environment. Some of us are takers. Yeah, that's just how it is.
I'll donate.
Next one. Buy the 2-ply. Most of the more expensive versions of things aren't worth it. 2-ply is an exception.
The days Next. Are better.
Moving on. Mow your lawn. Care for your home. Do the work that is worth doing. You'll feel pride when it's done. You will stand back on your street and admire it. You will walk outside after dinner to suck in the freshly lawn-clipped air through your nose, and it will be bliss. I used to hire somebody to cut my grass because my time was more valuable. And then one day, I don't remember why, but I went outside and cut my own grass. And it felt really, really good to care for my own home. It felt really, really good to stand back and look at it. And I called the company and I told them not to come anymore. And I've cut my own grass ever since. I think there's a lot missing in all those conversations of, you know, what's your time value? Can you hire somebody to, it's like, yeah, you, I mean, you could maybe, if you can afford it. But the other question is, should you, And it's a rule that I really enjoy following. I don't know. I don't always love cutting my own grass. I don't always look forward to it, but I'm very happy that I do it. Next. Compost. 28% of all waste that ends up in landfills is compostable food scraps and garden waste. This waste leads to increased emissions of methane. Composting at home is an easy way for free to do your part for the environment. Use a big backyard composter if you have the space. If not, get one of those tabletop ones that compost overnight. In 24 hours, like your dishwasher runs, you set your composter. This is a big one. It is unbelievable how much landfill waste can be avoided if everybody just composted their eggshells and vegetable scraps. You know, their paper towel, whatever. I look out at our neighbors because we've got one of those big backyard composting things, right? And every night, part of my cleaning up the kitchen is I take the bowl that we've collected on our counter, in addition to my coffee grinds, and I bring it out and I dump it in the thing. And, you know, once a week, once every 2 weeks, I just dig in a shovel and mix it. And then once a year, what I'll do is I'll just take a wheelbarrow or two of the stuff and I'll put it into one of our garden beds. We have so much less garbage than our neighbors. It's astounding. And we actually save money too, because where we live in Toronto, if you have the small garbage bins, you get your garbage pickup for free, but you can get two bigger sizes. And if you get the bigger sizes, then you've got to pay for garbage pickup. Obviously the bigger size, you pay more. We're just about the only one that has the smallest garbage bin, and we never fill it. You know, if we have a party maybe, but other than that, we never fill it. And our neighbors you see on garbage day, like it was just the other day, was garbage day here, you know, every 2 weeks. Our neighbors are like overflowing the big one. And I got to think that a lot of that is compostable stuff. So compost, it's easy. It's free. You know, it's these little things like trying to conserve water around the home, like composting, I think that make a big difference. And it feels good. Okay, next. Plant veggies. Get some dirt under your fingernails. Put something in the ground and watch it grow. Even if it's just a tomato plant or two. Learn to water the soil, not the plant. Improve its environment for living. Nurture it, even though it seems like nothing is happening. Smile as the struggling sprout pushes through the dirt for the first time. Continue to care for the young, frail stem as it pushes to survive. Then, let it get wild as it takes on a life of its own. Maybe tie it to a bamboo shoot so it doesn't fall over, but let it grow however it damn well pleases. Is that metaphor obvious?
Nurture something and watch it grow?
Like, do I need to call out that that's like a metaphor for raising children?
No, I think you're fine.
Okay. Good. Next up, separate your fields of play. Home life is a field, so is work life. Keep them separate. This is not just working from home. I mean, some people, if you have to work from home or if you enjoy working from home, that's great. I found it to be extraordinarily difficult working from even a spare room, even though we had the space at home. I found it really, really difficult because what would happen is, you know, we had the room that was my quote unquote office, like a spare bedroom, right? And I'd close the door when I was in there, and then I closed the door when I left there. And even then, you know, it was the bedroom beside Calvin's. This was before Jaden was born. And I put Calvin to bed, and then I'd walk past that bedroom on the way to my own bedroom. And all of a sudden, I'd get cued in and start thinking about work. And I wouldn't be thinking about Calvin or my book or Allison or whatever. And I found that I would be kept up at night, sometimes worrying when I shouldn't have been. And it was really difficult for me. I also am of the strong opinion, and I know people who make it work. I cannot imagine ever making it work, that working alongside your spouse is often a bad idea. I know people who make it work, and they say it's great, and they say that they're able to separate, but then whenever I have meals with them or I spend time with them, all that they talk about is work in their business. So I don't really believe them when they say that they're able to separate it. I think it just kind of meshes together in this weird thing, and that's just not how I want to live and exist. And so for me, the rule of separating fields of play is something I'm quite passionate about. But other people say that they can make it work. Amber, you work from home. Well, I guess, Ren, you guys both work from home, right?
Yes. I work. So for me, this comes up a lot with my clients because my clients are 100% ladies. Hello, ladies. They have a lot of mixed use space issues that typically disrupts sleep because so many of them will work in their bedroom. Yes. Or read a report in the bed at night, and the brain gets confused as to what space it's in. Mm. And I try to get them to keep that out. I try to advise my clients to not, I know you don't have a television at all, John. TV watching is not something that goes on in the house.
We don't have a television, but we do watch Netflix. Right.
You watch Netflix. Yeah. I try to encourage my clients to not have a television in their bedroom.
Yeah.
Because so many of the clients in my generational sort of space grew up with the concept of watching like Johnny Carson in bed because that's what their parents did. Mm. And it kind of trickled down watching the late night interview shows, talk shows in bed. And now a lot of them feel like they can't sleep without it. But I only Hot stuff incoming, ladies. I only want my body to prep for two things when I go through my bedroom door.
Oh, what are those?
Sleep and bow chicka wow wow. Those, just those two things, right? And I think the more you mix that space, the harder it is. I think you just don't live efficiently in any of the spaces. I think you don't do great work when it's time to do work. You don't relax that great when it's time to relax. That's a big problem now that more people work from home who built their habits in office environments, right? Their formative years as young adults was leaving the house for work. And then all of a sudden, those same people got forced into learning how to do it at home. And they're not good at separating the two things.
You actually reminded me of another rule that I'm going to add to this, which is no electronics in the bedroom. Not a TV, no electronics in the bedroom.
Same.
Now, I'm not saying that I always follow that, but phones don't enter the bedroom.
My no TV in the bedroom. My chargers are outside.
Yep. Saying this as somebody who watched an episode of The Office in bed last night before sleep and then plugged in my phone beside my bed. So do as I say, not as I do, friends. But
at least the intention is there.
But now that we went over this, I was like, oh yeah, like this is the point, right? It's so easy to fall into these patterns and become unconscious and on autopilot. And just this once, now that I have the rule and I'm reminded of it, I was like, oh, idiot, I'm not going to do that tonight. That's right. The point. That's the point of having these rules. Okay. Let me whip through the next ones. Next is greet them at the door. When somebody you love comes home, stop what you're doing, get up, and meet them. Next one is walk them to the door. When somebody you love is leaving the home, stop what you're doing, get up, and wave goodbye. It's the simplest things. The amount of time, if you live with somebody else, that you spend either leaving or coming home, or that they spend leaving and coming home, if you were to add up those minutes, I got to find it. I think it was a Tony Robbins thing. I saw a calculation one time. It's like 8% of the time that you spend with somebody else, if you live with them, is spent with one of you leaving or coming home. It's like a ridiculously big number that you can't be passive about. And I fall into the trap of being passive. You know, for example, just before we recorded this podcast, I of course woke up early to write and I was working on the section. So I was reminded of this rule and I was sitting down at a kitchen table, just having a quick bite. I actually did a genetic screening call because I'm positive most likely for this BRCA gene mutation, which is like common in Ashkenazi Jews. For anybody who's familiar with that. And so I had a genetics call and I just finished that. I was having a bite before this podcast and Allison had just come home. She was returning some stuff at Costco before we leave for Mexico. And I heard the garage open and I didn't respond because I was eating. And then I heard the door open and I didn't respond and I was eating. And then it clicked in. It was like the rule, greet them at the door. Put my spoon down. I got up and I gave her a kiss and I said hi. And that was it. It's such a simple little thing, but it shows that person, I think, that they're really important, that you're happy to see them. So greet them at the door and then walk them to the door. And then the final one is, I wish I had a shorter way of saying this, but be there and be present or don't be there at all. Poke around the corner and take 5 minutes before coming home to yourself. Answer the email, scroll social media, or just sit and stare. But finish what you need to do before you get home. When you walk in the door, have your head up, smiling, ready to hug your wife, play with your kids, or help with dinner. When it comes to home life, it's better to be fully there for less time than only be half aware, even if you're there for longer. That's the same. Who was it? Jason Kalipa. CrossFit guy. I don't remember if this was in a conversation with him or whether it was part of his presentation, but he told a story, you know, I don't know if he still does, but he owned a gym or some gym that he owned or co-owned or something like that. And he walked into the gym on his phone. Right. This was the gym that he owned. He was walking in. I guess they had to like walk past the floor to get to their offices in the back. So he wasn't coaching. He wasn't anything like that. He came into his office and was walking across the floor and he was on his phone. And his business partner said, I'll try to get the story right factually, but his business partner said, hey, Jason, can I give you some constructive feedback? And Jason said, yeah, of course. He goes, don't ever, ever walk into the gym on your phone. When you walk into the gym that you own and there are members working out, don't walk through the gym head down in your phone. If you need to, spend an extra 5 minutes in your car and finish up what you got to do on your phone, or just take that time to scroll social media, right? Whatever you feel like you need to do, so that when you walk into that space, the people who share that space with you know that they are the most important people in your life at that moment. I thought that was really good advice as a business owner, not just for family. Those are the rules I'm going to stick with for now. We got 1 minute left. Anything to add on that, Ren, Amber?
Yeah, being on the phone is mad douchey. It's giving Kanye energy, bro. Don't do that.
Seriously.
Speak to the people.
You don't want Kanye energy.
Not new Kanye energy.
Sure. Whatever that means.
Old Kanye energy was exciting and fun.
So that's what we'll leave you with today then, from Lamont. Weird. From Lamont Wenzel Jones. Don't walk through life with that new Kanye energy. Walk through life with old Kanye energy.
Oh, that's the title of my first book. Been waiting on the title. That's it.
That's pretty funny.
That's a good line. I'm going to quote that today, John, and post it on the interwebs.
Okay.
And thanks for listening. Composting.
Thanks for being here. Talk soon.
Thank you, John. San Diego. couldn't help it.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.